You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined right now by Harrison Fagan. He is off streaking through the streets of Fullerton and the greater Cal State Fullerton area because the Lakers won a thriller against the hated Boston Celtics. So I'm here solo for the first segment of the show, and then on the second half of here, we are going to throw it to a conversation that I had with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics. I'm going to warn everybody before that goes that we recorded this before the game, so I would have been exponentially more smug had the Lakers beaten the Celtics and then I got to record that one. So I'm just going to warn you guys that the conversation went where it did. It was still a really fun conversation. It's a nice long one, so you guys will have plenty of podcasting hashtag content to get you through your daily commutes. But that was, I'm just going to warn you that the air that I would have recorded that conversation with was not quite the one that I'm recording this one with, because the Lakers had not yet beat that Celtics ass, as James Worthy would like to say. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, where Harrison writes, Lakers Outsiders, where I write. Harrison is at HM Fagan. I am at Anthony Irwin, LA. Let's go ahead and talk about this game. I'm going to start with the response to the game, which of course, because it's we can't let the Lakers have nice things. Why would we ever do that? But the conversation after the game was, oh, well, the Celtics played terribly, this and that, and they're on this really tough stretch, and they haven't been playing good basketball, and man, right? I don't need to hear it, man. I really don't. They are a better roster. They are they still have Kyrie Irving. They still have Al Horford. I was told that Jason Tatum is this special rookie. But every time I saw him, he looked like Eminem at the beginning of 8 Mile with spaghetti all over his jacket. There's no excuse here, man. The Celtics still played a game against the Lakers at full strength, basically. They don't have Gordon Hayward, obviously. They haven't had him since 5 minutes into the season. But the Lakers didn't have Lonzo Ball. They still started Tyler Ennis. Brandon Ingram shot 2 of 11, and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope went 2 of 8. The Lakers missed 10 free throws on the stretch of a game, and yet they still found a way to win. They found a way to win their seventh game in 9 tries of their last 9 games. They found a way to win against a rival Boston Celtics team. They found a way to win against a better rival Boston Celtics team, so I'm going to remain positive about this, right? And this all gets back to again when Harrison and I show frustration about the state and the direction of the Lakers. This is why. It's because you see Kyle Kuzma go off for an insane stretch of basketball where every time he basically lobbed the ball towards the basket, you thought to yourself, wow, that is a chance at going in. And more often than not, it did. You're watching Julius Randle go up against Al Horford, a top 3 to 5 center in many people's view, and hold his own. Larry Nance Jr. steps in and provides the spark that you would like there on a night where Brooke Lopez goes 0-4 from 3 and 5 of 10 on the night. You still have those guys, the younger guys, to step in. And down the stretch of a tightly contested game, they found a way to pull it off. And it was a really exciting one. I want to remain as positive about this as I possibly can, because frankly, the conversation that I had with John, he asked me some questions that led me down a dark path. But still, it was a fantastic game. Look, I think we've seen over the last 5 games or so, we have reached a point where Tyler Ennis plays 14 minutes in tonight's game, last night's game. We don't need to see any more of that. Alex Caruso stepped in, and while his line isn't impressive, basically an over, right? 0 points, only one assist, one steal, one personal foul. He goes 0-4 from the field, 0-2 from 3-point range, 0-2 from the free throw line. But he still, they just play a brand of basketball that the Lakers are more comfortable playing with. Because of the way they play with Lonzo Ball whenever he's healthy. So and then the other thing too is Jordan Clarkson, down the stretch of that game, played in the point guard role and did so fine because they figured out, okay, we aren't going to ask Jordan Clarkson to stand up there at the top of the key and make sure that he sets everybody up across the court. No, we're going to get a lot more movement across the entire court. Whoever has an advantage, we're going to have that player attack their guy, whether it's to break them down and get to the basket itself, or to break them down and break the defense down, and then find an open teammate. But the Lakers are finding ways to win without Lonzo Ball, and that's not something you could say about them only 3 games ago, right? Only a few games ago. And again, that this is why the last podcast was centered or was focused basically solely on why things are kind of looking up for the Lakers. So it's great that podcast led into this one, and it led into this victory for the Lakers over the Celtics. I'm going to go ahead and go before my voice gives out altogether once again. But enjoy this conversation that I have with John. It's a really fun one. We get into all kinds of stuff. We ask a question. I ask him, well, we talk about Paul Pierce and the end of his career versus the end of Kobe's. We talk about the young cores of both these teams, the directions that both these teams seem to be heading in. It's a really fun conversation. It's a lengthy one, and it gets down to the nitty-gritty. And then he tries to slip in some Kendrick Perkins stuff right there at the very end. I was not having any of that. Enjoy it. Enjoy that conversation. Enjoy the vibe that you're getting from this Lakers victory. It was a great one. This was a lot of fun. Beating the Celtics is always great. So we want more of that. You know what? I'm going to send you guys into that. Yep. Get it, James. Yep. Uh-huh. Woo-hoo! Have a great one, everybody.
All right, Anthony. So first question, what game plan do you think LeVar Ball is going to throw together for the Celtics?
It will definitely involve 49 minutes in a 48-minute game of Lonzo. he'll petition the league to get LiAngelo and LaMelo in, and they would play 3-on-5, and they would see how it would go from there.
Yeah, sounds about right. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's from the outside looking in, like that's got to be number one. And I don't know. I know L.A. is a different place, and I think people in L.A. tend to just like the show more than anything. But this has got to be annoying, right? All of his chirping.
Yes and no. It's more annoying because it's just so pervasive. It's so present. And this is going to sound kind of bad, but Lonzo has been hurt for the last 5 games or so. And because he's been hurt, LeVar can't really have a take on the Lakers. Right. And right. So, and then the other thing too, it kind of reached a breaking point where Luke was asked about it multiple days in a row. And he was just fed up with it. And he finally said, look, guys, I'm just going to answer questions about the job that I'm doing. And then Jeannie had a couple Instagram posts and Twitter posts. And she had that hashtag in Luke, we trust. And that was the closest that the Lakers front office really came to talking or addressing these rumors. And she had been sending that hashtag out there a little while, but it seemed to coincide with the rumors of, well, do the Lakers, are they really confident in Luke? What is he still the guy for the job? Is his job actually in danger? Does Lonzo actually have his back? Because Lonzo had some kind of awkward quotes. And then it all came to a breaking point. Jeannie kind of said her thing. The disappointing thing was that Magic, like it's his job. He was hired to be a PR guy. And at no point has he stepped up and had any kind of appearance out there to calm the waters and just kind of and be that calming force that he should be, that he was hired to be.
Yeah, that's one of the things I think from the outside looking in, that would have been nice to see for a franchise that's being kind of attacked by this guy. And we knew, I'm watching all of this stuff saying, oh, thank God that the Celtics didn't just stay at the top pick and draft Lonzo, because I don't want to deal with that. And who knows what Lonzo's going to be. I still think he's going to be okay, but it's not worth, to me, it's just not worth the all of this other stuff that goes along with him. When you look at how deep this draft class is, and hey, look, we've got Jason Tatum. We're very happy with Jason Tatum.
Yeah, but I was going to say, you guys made out about as well as anybody.
Yeah, that, I mean, just to think that the Celtics were given a potentially top two, or if it conveys next year, maybe even a number one overall pick for the right to draft Jason Tatum. I mean, it's still kind of like mind-blowing. But I would have, if it was reversed, if they did get him and LeVar came out and said, Brad Stevens doesn't know what he's doing, he doesn't know how to coach Lonzo, I'm pretty sure that Danny Ainge and Wick Grosbeck would have come out pretty quickly and be like, we're fine. There's nothing wrong with Brad Stevens. You're just, whatever, don't pay attention. Like, nothing to see here. But
and to be clear, from the people that I had spoken to in and outside of the organization, there was never any moment that Luke's job was ever in peril. It was just, it would have been nice that even casual fans out there, and the Lakers have the most casual fans out there, right? It's the biggest fan base, arguably, in the NBA and one of the biggest in American professional sport. And because of that, that casual, that kind of Kobe avatar, you know, Lakers dynasty 2008, you know, kind of accounts out there. Those guys are the ones who are the loudest out there, who are wondering, hey, what's going on with Luke? Everybody who kind of followed the story pretty closely, everybody knows that Luke is safe for at least the entirety of his current contract. He wasn't a Magic or Pelinka hire, so maybe in that respect he wouldn't be as safe as the typical coach that they could have maybe hired personally. But he's still a Laker guy. His dad is NBA royalty. He's not the kind of guy that the Lakers were just going to pass off. Nobody ever knew that for sure based on statement from the front office. It would have been nice to have that.
Yeah, look, the Lakers just absolutely could not, even if they were thinking about it, even if everything was true, they could not, after what LeVar said, come out and fire Luke, because then it looks like LeVar is pulling the strings, and you just cannot have that as a franchise. You can't have the loudmouth father who just wants reality shows and the spotlight to actually have any sort of sway. So that, if anything, solidified to me Luke for at least the rest of the season, and there's no you just couldn't give into that. But that's all sideshow bullshit. It's fun because for me, for Celtics fans, we sit there and we go, ha, look at the Lakers, That's funny because it's not us and it's you especially. So we keep hoping that it drags the Lakers down enough to get that pick. So somewhere in that 2 through 5, be nice.
Yeah, I don't see the Lakers necessarily falling that far because they don't have the impetus to tank. There are other teams out there that are going to by the end of the season. They won't necessarily be trying to lose games. None of these players ever try to lose games, but you'll get the random hamstring injury that keeps you out for a week longer than usual, or you'll have a number one overall pick who literally isn't playing right now because he forgot to shoot a jump. Oh, wait, that's already happening. So that's the other thing too here is that for as annoying as LeVar is, and for as – I'm not going to say Lonzo has been disappointing because I think he's been pretty good. And the fact that his numbers say that he has the impact that they do, despite him not being the kind of shooter that anybody was hoping for, that tells me that if that shot ever does come around, he could make a pretty significant leap rather easily, right? With all of that said, at least he's not Markelle Fultz. And so the Lakers are at least in a better spot there than they could be potentially, because there was some rumors about, well, who might the Sixers take if they weren't going to take Fultz and if they weren't going to take Lonzo, if they had their eyes on somebody else and Fultz fell to the Lakers and they would have had that tough call to make. There is a scenario out there where the Lakers have Fultz and he isn't playing. And I saw somebody trying to make the case that somehow this would be swept under the rug a little bit more if it was the Lakers, that it wouldn't be as prominent a storyline. And I'm just like, what world do you live in that a number two overall pick would not be playing for the Lakers because you forgot how to shoot, that the entire league wouldn't be laughing at the Lakers? Where do you think you're coming from on there?
That's ridiculous.
I really like this draft. I think there are guys up and down the draft who have made their teams better. You have a really special one in Tatum. Lonzo is, I think, at least keeping up with the vast majority of that top 10 kind of sector. And it's not really fair to compare it with Simmons because, in my opinion, he was cashing NBA checks last year. So it's tough for me to call him a rookie flat out. It's a fun draft class, and it's a bunch of good kids that I think are going to help their teams for the foreseeable future.
A bunch of my listeners heard you say that about Ben Simmons and said out loud, oh, John's going to love this guy. I say the same thing. I have a little bit more leeway, I think, for the guy who misses 1 year rather than an Embiid who missed two. But I agree that that 1 year of exposure to the NBA life and learning a system, learning all that stuff, it does give an advantage. I mean, Grant, you've not played against NBA competition, so you're still a rookie. That's the rule. But it does give you an advantage. So I'm glad that somebody on this podcast is with me on this.
It's funny because I forget. I wish I knew which kid it was who said it. I want to say it was Donovan Mitchell, but they asked him basically, hey, what – How could you explain this tremendous leap that you took when you got to the NBA? How are you that so much better a basketball player than you were in college? And he said basically, well, I don't have classes I have to go to. I have great coaching that I have access to 24/7 basically. I don't have classes that I have to focus on. It's that those things aren't the distraction that they are in college. And I can just focus on my game and my game only. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy to me that Ben Simmons had a full year. And what you're finding out, like next year, Markelle Fultz is going to have the same advantage despite forgetting how to shoot, right? He's had coaches watching him day in, day out for an entire calendar year. And he's going to step in next year more mature physically and mentally, also having had that coaching. And watch, next year he's going to show out compared to other rookies because he isn't going to be a rookie.
Right. I mean, that I can totally see that. Again, if he ever learns how to shoot again, which, yeah. As a side note, again, so happy it's not happening to us. And I don't know if that shoulder injury really just screwed with him and it created this hitch in the shot. It's almost like the Charles Barkley golf swing. Like, you know you're supposed to swing, and for some reason he can't bring himself to just swing all the way through. And who knows? I can't imagine that shoulder, whatever happened to his shoulder, imagine it permanently just destroying his shot like that. I mean, God, that just wild.
Well, but, because to me, it reminds me of guys with the yips, right? Knobloch not being able to throw to first, the pitcher for the Cubs, who was also a Boston guy. What's his name? But he couldn't throw to first either. He couldn't make a pickoff throw to first either.
Is that John Lester?
Yeah, John Lester. He was having some of the yips issues there, and it used to drive me insane because the Dodgers weren't running on him in the series that they had against. but it feels like a yips thing, and it takes a lot to get over it. And I've heard from some people that have access to people out there in Philadelphia who say there isn't an injury, that the injury thing, he left for a month, came back and forgot how to shoot, which is kind of terrifying, which is you got to wonder how he's going to get over that if it's just a mental block. Could you imagine if one of us just forgot how to say locked on, whatever it is?
Just randomly. I flubbed it once, and then I could just never do it again.
Exactly. Somehow I think the show would suffer a little bit.
Yeah, it might be a problem. It's funny. We're on RedsArmy.com doing this whole thing because Pierce's number is being retired in a few weeks, and we're doing this run-up to the retirement by profiling all of the retired numbers. And so I did Casey Jones, and he in my research, he said that when he was like in high school, he at 5'10", he could fill it up. He was a big time scorer. And then he grew like 3 or 4 inches and his shot just left him and never came back. And he made his bones in the NBA as a defensive just monster. Mm-hmm. So it's hilarious to me that could happen, but it's happened. It's happened to guys before. Like, all of a sudden something happens and the shot just goes away. So I don't know. Maybe that's Markel. And again, going back to this all just makes Danny Ainge look like how can I even describe Danny Ainge after this? Like, you traded out of the first pick. You got a premier pick for the right to pick maybe the best, at least in the short term, the best player overall in the top three. Now, who knows how it shakes out down the road, but right now you project things out and you say Tatum's going to be the best player and Lonzo has an opportunity to kind of catch up to him. And Fultz, who knows what the hell Fultz is going to get. And the Celtics get a pick on top of that for the right to take that guy. So I don't know.
I was going to ask, since we're kind of sort of on the topic of Pierce, I was going to ask, so one thing that I've kind of gone back and forth with as a Laker fan is, so the Lakers pay out Kobe and they have the farewell tour, and Laker fans have the opportunity. They never had to watch Kobe play in a different uniform. They got the opportunity to have their goodbye. He dropped 60 points in his last game and all of that stuff. And that was the way that the Lakers decided to let that play out. The Celtics went the opposite route, right? Obviously, they trade Pierce and Garnett, and they get the haul that they got that has, frankly, bolstered the organization. You could make the argument that Pierce's most lasting impact might have come via that trade.
Sure.
compared to what he did as a player, you know. I wouldn't make it necessarily. I thought Pierce was a really good player, but if you were looking at long-standing impact, he enabled the Celtics to do all these crazy things and build their organization in this crazy way. Having that as a reference point, and with that all as context, would you do it all the same way again, or were you of the mindset when they traded Pierce, like, oh man, this feels kind of iffy?
Both. at the time, you said, like, you just kind of knew, like it was, it was bad, and you're like, oh, man. And Pierce knew, and everybody knew that this was going to be it. And when the trade was made, like, the last thing I wanted at that point, sentimentally, I wanted Pierce to come back. I wanted what you guys had with Kobe. I wanted that, you know, him to ride off into the sunset in green. Like, I wanted that whole thing. So then you start to hear the rumors, and you're like, oh, man, this seems inevitable. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. And then the deal is announced, and you're like, well, that's not so bad. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw that haul, and I remember thinking at the time, like, well, in 2013, the Nets were good, but Pierce is old, Garnett is old, Terry is very old. Like, that 2016 and 18, there was always a possibility that Brooklyn could fall off a cliff if this didn't mm-hmm. work out. And obviously, it worked out.
Best case scenario.
Absolutely. Absolute best case scenario.
Yeah.
So that made it all better. And I would do it all over again. And look, Pierce is very self-aware. On the night of the draft lottery, where the Celtics got the number one overall pick, Pierce tweeted, look what I leave behind for the Celtics on my way out. So he knew it. He got, like, that's just a hilarious way to acknowledge, like, yeah, I mean, and for Pierce, it wasn't just like a casting off. Like, they let Pierce go just for the first time, really be a free agent and kind of do his thing. And he bounced around a little bit, you know, the Washington days, the Clipper days. And all of that. Like it's almost like you forget, though. Like, oh yeah, the Washington, he was in Washington, especially mm-hmm. after the Celtics with their, you know, the Wizards rivalry over the past couple of years. Not once did I sit there and think, yeah, man, Pierce played for that team. I've completely forgotten about that until you think back. You're like, oh yeah, that was the thing that he did. Basically everything after the Celtics with Pierce just kind of been a faint memory. Like, I don't care about that. I just care about his time in Boston. So I guess the lesson for anybody who's rooting for a guy and he's at the tail end of his time, yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have Kobe do that thing and be a Laker forever. But at what cost? At what cost? And we look at where the Lakers are now and where the Celtics are now. Wouldn't Lakers fans want to be where the Celtics are in the standings? I mean, wouldn't you want to have, if it meant three fewer years of Kobe Bryant and he was like, oh yeah, Kobe was a Timberwolf, like, I forgot about those days, and he like finished in Detroit for a season or something like that, and would anybody care? Would that matter to anybody if the haul that you got in return put you like two games behind the Warriors right now?
Yeah, that's the thing, is that I think it really helps Boston fans to be able to have it play out absolutely best case. Like, it'd be one thing if Pierce went somewhere and won a title somewhere else, right? And then on top of that the haul that you got back in return for him wasn't what it turned out to be for Boston. So it being best case scenario paints a lot of the analysis of the situation. I personally, for me, one of the worst, or not worst days of my Laker fandom, but one of the first kicks one of the first Draymonds that I ever received was when Kobe, they were asking him, because they were heading into an offseason where both LeBron and Carmelo Anthony were going to be free agents. And I remember a question was asked to Kobe, hey, you could help the Lakers out here by taking a pay cut here. And he said, pay cut? Why would I take a pay cut here? Why is it on me to take a pay cut so that I can get these guys here? And that was the first time, that was right around the time that I first started covering the team. And it was like, oh, oh man. And that's when you start seeing the writing on the wall that this might not end particularly well. And meanwhile, you're looking over at the damn Celtics and you're looking at, wait, Billy Keane gave them what? That turned into what? and yeah, you kind of saw, like you said, you have the Pierce thing turn out as well as it turned out for the Celtics, and then you have it turn out for the Lakers, where, look, there's no other way of saying this. Kobe taking that $24 million contract, or the 2-year $48 million contract, put the Lakers in a spot where it was impossible for them to not be the worst stretch of Lakers history. And had maybe they moved Kobe, and if that cap space was used on anything other than post Achilles Kobe, and they don't have that farewell tour that kind of hurts D'Angelo Russell's rookie year, and it basically it played out just about worst case, other than that 60-point game against Utah on his last night. It played out about as poorly as it could have. And yeah, if you were to ask some honest Laker fans out there who aren't Kobe Abbey people, you would probably get a few responses like, yeah, I'd like to see what Kobe could have got based on, you know, comparing him to the player he was compared to Paul Pierce. If Billy King was willing to send everything that he sent over to Boston, I would only imagine he would have passed over 33 different lottery picks for Kobe, you know? And so, yeah, it's a what if that I was interested to hear from a Boston perspective based on how well things have gone out there, if that makes you guys more willing to do the same thing over again. And yeah, it makes sense that you would.
I mean, I wouldn't have cared if Pierce had won a championship somewhere else. I mean, that would have been fine. Like nothing that happened. If they traded him to Brooklyn and Brooklyn won a championship, I'd be like, I knew the Celtics were rebuilding anyway. At that point, they were done. There was KG's knee. Just it couldn't handle the burden that was necessary. The Celtics run was basically over, and there was no real reason to try to run it back. They made that trade. Danny Ainge pulled the trigger at the exact right time. He read the marketplace, and Brooklyn was just uniquely positioned to make a big, big mistake, because Prokhorov had just come in. It was a big pissing match with the Knicks. He was putting up Jay-Z net signs across from Madison Square Garden. Like, he was really trying to tweak the Knicks and trying to take over the city, and they couldn't get their top choices. And Billy King was basically under a directive to create a winner. And Pierce and Garnett were easy targets to pair with Deron Williams Lopez.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's
Brooke
right.
Lopez. And they still had ISO Joe. I mean, that wasn't a bad team. If they had talent, they just didn't have the right attitudes. And D. Will was probably the killer on that team, because he just wasn't willing to do what was necessary. But I digress.
There's a reason he's not in the league anymore.
Right. And so that situation was perfect for Danny Ainge to say, hey, look, I've got stars. I've got guys. I mean, it's like a used car. It's like, it's got a lot of miles on it, but man, it's still good. You can still drive this thing. It's very reliable. And Billy King was like, yeah, whatever. I need to put a contender together. And he's just lucky. Like it's one of those, I don't know if anybody's ever gone car shopping and you make an offer to the dealer and the dealer like accepts it. And you're like, oh my God, really? You're going to take that much for this trade? Really? I was ready to negotiate, but that's fine. No objections.
Like, I mean, I know Pierce. I know Pierce is against honoring other people on his night, but Billy King really should get a shout out that night. Like
forget the Isaiah tribute video. Put a Billy King tribute video on Pierce night. I'm all for that. So look, I'm happy the way everything turned out. I would have loved my dream scenario. Is everything happened like this for the Celtics, but Pierce went out to L.A. and went to the Clippers, and the Clippers actually won a championship. Like, that would have been great to have Pierce get one championship in L.A., but not the Lakers, and just have that thing being at home. And I was surprised. I was so convinced that he was going to go to the Clippers when he instead signed with the Wizards. I think he wanted to, and I forget exactly. I'd have to go back and look. there was an opportunity. I swear there was an opportunity. And then something, the timing didn't work out and the money wasn't there. So Pierce just said, okay, fine, Washington. But that was the most shocking thing to me. But if he had gone out to the Clippers and they won a title, I would have been happy for him. You know, go home, win one at home, retire. He still would have come back and signed the contract, the one-day contract with the Celtics. But whatever.
I can't lie. This is where Boston fans are going to roll their eyes because this is the Laker fan in me. But I kind of enjoyed having Pierce up close and personal be one of the worst players in the NBA at the end of his career for the Lakers or for the Clippers. It was pretty fun. That was watching Clipper bloggers freak out night after night after night. Like what did we get? And I'm just like, oh man, this is it. At that time, the Lakers were so terrible. There were only like three things that I could root for. So that was one of them.
Okay. Everyone get their requisite eye rolls out.
Sorry, Boston fans. I had to take one shot.
I can't have a Lakers guy on the Celtics show without you antagonizing our listeners. that's kind of why you're here. It's kind of I need the villain, I need the bad guy.
A little bit. Last time you and I talked, we were in Vegas and remember we were trying to have a conversation about Kyrie and Isaiah Thomas.
I don't remember anything from Las Vegas. Don't ever ask me if I remember anything from Vegas.
But I was of the mindset that I thought Kyrie would be a perfectly fine replacement for Isaiah Thomas and that I thought he was at least capable of one day becoming a defender, and I didn't think Isaiah was ever really capable of becoming a defensive, anything less than a liability. It's worked out pretty well having Kyrie out there in Boston, right?
Yeah, it's been okay.
he's so freaking good. I love watching him play basketball, and he's a Celtic now. So Laker fans out there listening right now, you guys are going to get angry at me for saying this, but. He's just really fun to watch play the game of basketball and look, it's pretty incredible that you guys are where you are while Gordon Hayward has yet to play longer than 5 minutes this season. Right. And that has a lot to do with Tatum being really, really good and Jaylen Brown taking the step forward that he did. And Al Horford still being really good, but Kyrie deserves a ton of credit for being he's been a godsend out there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's been really good. He's played, I think he's adjusted his game a little bit. I think he has maybe settled into some of his older habits that we weren't seeing at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. He really, really loves that mid range right elbow jump shot off the pick and roll. And excuse me, I've seen him kind of settle back into that a little bit more than he was at the beginning of the season. But look, you tend to fall into some old habits, especially I think during that December stretch where the Celtics schedule was just brutal and there's fatigue and a lack of practice and everybody kind of goes back to what they've always done. So I think there's going to be some level of breaking out of those habits, and the Celtics have struggled. They've lost three in a row, three home games that they should have won, but eventually everything will kind of get back to, I think, where it belongs. And part of that is Kyrie being a little bit more conscious of where he's shooting the ball.
Yeah. But,
look, the thing about Kyrie Irving is he's just playing. He's doing the things that Brad Stevens generally wants him to do. And he's playing within the framework of, you know, the working with Al Horford and trying to get other guys involved. And it seems like he's not just trying to ISO. He's always going to have stretches where he's, you know, Kyrie with the ball on a string and he's just going to do what he does. But he's been really good. And all I can say is, I mean, Brad Stevens was always going to get the best out of players. And so my main concern about this trade was not necessarily that Kyrie was going to come in and be bad. My concern was always the fear that we were going to get in Boston essentially what we had with Isaiah Thomas, and we were going to fortify our biggest competitor by giving them Thomas and Crowder plus that pick and all that stuff. I was just afraid that that was going to make the, you know, LeBron stay in Cleveland, and all of a sudden you're the Celtics banging your head against that Cleveland Cavaliers wall for a few more seasons. Now, of course, I'm an idiot, and that's not how it worked out at all. And now the Cavaliers are back channeling accusations of Isaiah Thomas is killing this team. Like, Windhorst today said, Isaiah Thomas is killing this team. Like, a guy coming off a major hip injury, playing his way back 8 games into his return, and they're really going to say Isaiah Thomas is killing this team? Like, that's just such bullshit out of Cleveland. It just goes to show the operation that they're running over there. LeBron is kind of just unchecked, and there's just no... You talk about a front office that's just not really going to step up and defend anybody. That situation in Cleveland is just terrible. So,
I mean, I thought to me, it showed me exactly why Kyrie was ready to go.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
He last year, that Windhorst quote would have been about Kyrie if he was still there. And look, I'm out here. I lived through the Kobe era, and he is beyond reproach from the organization standpoint. They will defend that contract, that last contract of his, until the day everybody dies, right? And that's the same kind of thing you're seeing out there with LeBron, that the blame is going to go everywhere but at LeBron, especially in a season when they're trying to keep him happy, right? That was a shot at Isaiah Thomas, and it was directed at him because, look, if there's a guy who's going to get moved to try to make everybody happy again, it's going to be Thomas. And it's unfortunate that somebody who reached the levels that he did last year is now seen as the scapegoat, having only played, 10 games, 8 games or something like that. And the problems that they have now with Thomas aren't near – they're the same problems that they had before Thomas. It's that J.R. Smith isn't worth $30 million. It's that – Tristan Thompson isn't worth $68 million. It's that the role players that they got have all been generated or they've all been geared towards helping offensively. And at no point did they ever think to themselves, hey, we need to improve defensively. Oh, Jose Calderon, Derrick Rose, and Isaiah Thomas are going to help. that's not how basketball works. It's something. And now you're finding out, like, there at some point the Cavs are going to have this come to Jesus moment where they have to decide, all right, is that Brooklyn pick worth potentially losing LeBron over, right? Would they move that pick to get the kind of help that LeBron says he needs? And Boston fans are sitting there saying, gosh, living a charmed life.
Yeah. Everything's coming up Milhouse for Danny Ainge. It's just ridiculous. All right, let's get to this game of ours, the Celtics, the Lakers. Mm-hmm. No Lonzo, his knee's hurt. You've got a couple of other injuries. Brandon Ingram banged up ankle, but seems like he's going to play. And then Kuzma. I want to get to Kuzma because he's an interesting guy. He's when people want to tweak the Lakers, they'll say the real best rookie on the Lakers, Kyle Kuzma. Mm-hmm. But he's been
it's not true, but
right, of course. But you know, he was kind of like he came out of the gate super super great.
Oh yeah,
you know. But now, if people haven't been paying attention, he's having some issues with, you know, he was benched because he's just not playing any defense. And so I'm just kind of curious what your take after the beginning, Kuzma with this eyebrow raising start, and everybody's like, whoa, wait a minute, what's this guy doing? And then now maybe coming back down to earth a little bit and having some problems staying on the floor, and Walton kind of sending him a message saying, you got to play better defense. Like, what are you seeing from him? What's the deal there?
I think it's a combination of all kinds of things. I think Kuzma is hitting that rookie wall that everybody hits. Like, even Tatum's shooting has kind of come back to earth, right?
Yep.
And so I think you have some of that going on. I think it's also possible that he was shooting out of his mind, and it was crazy to expect the way that Kuzma was playing earlier this season to continue, because if it did continue, he would have been one of the best offensive rookies in the history of the sport. And you don't usually find that at the 27th pick.
And that's not sustainable?
Not usually. I think you have some of that going on. I think you have fatigue. He was playing some crazy minutes. He was averaging 40 minutes a couple weeks there because of injuries, because of how well he was playing. He was averaging close to 40 minutes a game there. And I think you see some fatigue. And the other thing too with Kuzma, his defensive problems are the kind of problems that rookies tend to have, where if you have him in isolation and if he's and he's on the perimeter and you say, all right, just guard the guy in front of you, just focus on that. He's actually still pretty good at that. He moves his feet really well. He's a better athlete than I think anybody really foresaw, obviously, or else he would have gone higher. But his problems defensively are the kind of, all right, now my guy doesn't have the ball anymore. I have to rotate here. I have to figure out how to handle an off-ball screen. Are we switching this? Are we depending on the coverage? Or am I supposed to run through the screen? Am I supposed to go under the screen? Or am I supposed to allow a backdoor? Am I supposed to make sure that a backdoor doesn't happen? Those kinds of things are the problems that all rookies tend to have usually. So I'm not too worried about it. I just think I want to see him play some more realistic minutes. I'd like to see the entire Lakers roster come back from the All-Star break, get kind of recharge the batteries a little bit. And this idea that he was ever going to be the best Lakers rookie. Now, maybe it could have happened because he is older than Lonzo, and those older players who have had more time to develop can make an impact. The Lakers have a guy, Josh Hart, who is built like a freaking tank, and because he had all those years in college to develop both mentally and physically, he comes in and he does things that you need an NBA role player to do. And Lonzo has had a couple instances where he bumped against the wrong player at the wrong time, at the wrong angle, and he's missed time because of that, because his body wasn't necessarily developed and ready to play 82 games of an NBA schedule. So I think Kuzma will be fine. I think he'll probably finish the season at somewhere between the numbers that he's had this last month or so and where he started the year. I think he's better than he's shown this last month, but he's not going to be as good as he was to start the season. And I think by the end of the season, so long as people allow themselves to come off of the narrative that they've had kind of drilled into their brain about Lonzo, and because LeVar is so loud and because Magic said that Lonzo's jersey was going to be retired, that was somehow the expectation. But eventually, by the end of the season, people will come around to the fact that, oh, yeah, that's right. Lonzo helps the Lakers and helps Kuzma do all of the things that he was doing earlier on in the season.
The one thing about Kuzma that may just be, I don't know if there's any correlation, but it's just kind of interesting. And as a Boston guy, I will give interesting things that make Lakers look bad. So his usage rate has gone up from October through January incrementally. And his shooting, as his usage has gone up, his shooting has gone down to a point where his true shooting is now at about 48%. For the month of January. So is there any concern at all that the more he is finishing the offense, the worse he is shooting? Is there any concern with that at all?
Maybe a little bit, but a lot of the numbers going down and the efficiency going down has coincided with Lonzo being out. And look, the Lakers don't have any creators on the perimeter. I mean, Jordan Clarkson is good enough at creating for himself to get the contract that he got from the Lakers. And KCP is fine if he's just told to get his. Julius Randle is fine if the type of creation is right down his eyesight. He doesn't have to do anything on the peripherals of his vision to create for other guys. The Lakers don't have anybody who can really step up and create for everybody on the court at the same time. And for somebody like Kuzma, who is a great shooter and is phenomenal around the rim, but his ball handling skills isn't necessarily where they need to be a bona fide NBA shot getter. He isn't there yet. And when he's expected to do those kinds of things and teams can focus in and coaches can develop strategies just for this guy, knowing that he's going to have a higher usage rate, he's going to struggle there. And does that mean that he can't develop those things? I don't necessarily ride with that theory, but for right now, he is not a primary offensive weapon. And it's crazy that he was expected to be. No rookies really, especially in the 27 range, are. Right. And what Laker fans have trouble doing is remaining realistic. So when Kuzma does struggle, they say, oh, the sky is falling, everything is ruined, and this guy's in trouble, and he isn't the guy that we thought we were getting. Maybe that's just not the case right now. He's going to be fine.
Okay, fair enough. Guys who are not going to be fine, guys like Julius Randle and others. I'm just really curious how you feel, going back to a front office discussion. How do you feel the Lakers have been handling these guys that are pretty obvious, and the Lakers have basically said as much, that these guys aren't coming back? And you got a talented guy in Randle. He plays pretty well. He's you know, his numbers look good. He's an above average player, and you know, but he's a young guy. He's 23 years old. There's definitely room to grow. Came back from that devastating injury, so maybe a little bit behind in his development overall, but regardless, I guess this is two parts, because they've announced essentially that some of these guys like Randle are not coming back for sure. They're absolutely on the trade market because they want to create two max slots. So is this hurting the team? How is this hurting the team? Is there Lakers exceptionalism going on here, thinking that they're going to get two max players? Are they potentially screwing themselves? This is much more than a two-part question, by the way, as I spit it out.
I'm on part four right now.
Yeah. Are they screwing themselves by so focusing on two max free agents that if for some reason they don't get those two free agents, now what? I mean, this seems like they very easily could. You get two guys, and if Paul George and LeBron go to the Lakers, then holy shit, things change very significantly. But what if they don't?
So I think to start, I wrote an article a couple weeks back, and we had reached that same point of the season that the Lakers had fallen off, not just last season, but the year before that and the year before that, where maybe the Lakers, it's all relative. But maybe the Lakers had started the season okay, and they looked okay, and then all of a sudden one or two injuries happen and everything falls off of a cliff. The defense goes into the tank. The offense isn't having anything generated by it, the defense, and the Lakers look like a bad NBA team, right? So I had noticed this trend, and I was sitting up and I was watching James Worthy talk about it on Spectrum Sportsnet, and he was basically saying, like, look, we've seen a coaching change, we've seen a front office change, and yet these same attitudes prevail. These attitudes are still there. And he was kind of flabbergasted as to how or where that was coming from. And basically for me, it's a matter of the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and hoping for a different result. And the Lakers now for 4 years have every single year they've said, oh, we're going to keep our books as clean as possible for X free agent here, right? Whether it was LaMarcus Aldridge, Greg Monroe, now it's LeBron and Paul George. We've had this say before, it was LeBron last time he was a free agent. And so you've had the same kind of mentality about how they're going to build. And it's led to a pretty tough situation for everybody to produce. And Luke has to figure out how to get a bunch of young guys to play defense above what they're capable of playing. His veteran leadership is going to come in the form of guys who are playing to remain in the NBA. So guess what those guys are going to be shooting for? they're looking at the next contract, and they're going to do whatever they can to make sure their next contract is as fruitful as they would like. And it's an untenable situation. And what it's led to is somebody like Julius Randle, who was very visibly unhappy with the way things were going. His role wasn't where he liked it to be. And he wore a sweater one day that said, pay me on the front of it. Right. you know what's going on there. And that's what happens when you have an organization that isn't as invested as the guys that they have, as they hope that the guys invest into their defensive and offensive principles. And I think Magic and Pelinka kind of sort of announcing to the world that this is going to be their intent has really screwed them, because so even if they are, those guys still are on the trade market, which they aren't at this point, because the offers that they were getting were laughable, because everybody knew what the Lakers hope was to do. But let's say they are on the trade market. Well, the trade market was set when you attached a number two overall pick to get rid of Timofey Mozgov's contract, right? And you set the market there, and then you wonder when you're trying to get rid of a Luol Deng contract, guess what teams are going to start asking for? Well, wait, you have another number two pick. That guy, that Ingram kid, looks like he's going to be pretty good, right? We want Ingram if you want us to take on Deng's deal. And the Lakers weren't willing to do that. So you've had reports now say that they've moved on from trying to trade Deng. And then that you have teams out there who knew that the Lakers were hesitant to pay Julius Randle in the offseason, not necessarily because he isn't the player that you would want to pay. I personally am a big Julius Randle fan, but because paying Julius Randle meant that you were not going to have room to pay a LeBron or a Paul George, right? And what teams were saying was Dallas basically said, all right, well, we'll trade you Nerlens Noel's unhappy ass for Julius Randle's unhappy ass. And somehow that didn't work out, because that's not what the Lakers were hoping to get from him, because you trade for Nerlens Noel and he's about to be a free agent, right? And somebody who they would want to keep around long-term too. So I think they've kind of fallen backwards into it because they've made their own bed and now they have to sleep in it. But they've fallen into the situation where, okay, maybe we don't get both LeBron and Paul George. Let's just set our sights on one of those guys. And they still feel pretty confident that Paul George wants to be a Laker. They don't think that OKC is going to make any kind of crazy title run that would convince him to stick around in OKC. So they say, all right, what if we get Paul George and we re-sign Julius Randle, and we go into next season with Lonzo, Kuzma, Ingram, this Hart kid, Randle, Paul George, and so-and-so, right? And see what that gets us next year. And that's a step forward. But again, you know this as well as anybody. The reason the Celtics were able to sign Al Horford was because they had Isaiah Thomas, right? And the reason they were able to sign Gordon Hayward was because they had previously signed Al Horford. And what these NBA players are doing at this point isn't, they don't want to be the first guy. They don't want to be the first big name in a rebuild. They want to be there, and they want to show up, and they want to win right away. So I think the Lakers are still relying on Lakers exceptionalism to think that, no, those rules don't apply to us. We're still going to be able to sign these guys despite not being the kind of situation that literally every other free agent has signed in over the last 4 years.
Well, it all still sounds like the Lakers are a mess to me.
So you have that. You always had. I'm glad I could hop on the show and and brighten Boston fans' day with that stuff.
Now, let me ask you this. because we were going for almost an hour here, so we got to wrap it up soon.
Mm-hmm.
But would you rather be in the position you're in now with Lonzo, Ingram, Kuzma, and the potential for a big-time free agent or two? Or would you rather have a front office that didn't throw crazy money at Mozgov and Deng and instead kept D'Angelo, have Ingram, and drafted Jason Tatum with the second pick?
I the Tatum thing to me, so I don't want this. This might come off as me kind of crapping on Tatum. This isn't. I really
I'm
like
totally
him as a player.
Totally setting you up. Totally setting you up to be a villain on this.
I think Tatum, for what he's asked to do, has been a godsend. He's been phenomenal out there. But I think it's also worth noting that he has a perennial all-star like Kyrie Irving to help lighten that load. And he has somebody in the front court who is as smart as Al Horford is to help lighten that load. And Jaylen Brown has developed the way that he has. So that kind of lightens the burden on Tatum. So everything that Tatum does at that point is you're kind of playing with house money. And it just so happens that Tatum is multiplying said house money, right? He's been so good that you can double down on these bets and feel really good doing so because he's been really freaking good. I don't know if Tatum would be necessarily the same player out here in LA trying to carry the load that Lonzo had to carry. I mean, you see the Lakers they just now the other day won their first game without Lonzo. And it's because the backups to Lonzo were Tyler Ennis and Alex freaking Caruso. Like, of course that wasn't going to go well. And, you know, if Tatum was out here, and sure, he would have a backup or not a backup, but a wing partner in Ingram and a wing partner in Kuzma who would help lighten the load in ways that Jaylen Brown has out there in Boston. But he still wouldn't have Kyrie and he still wouldn't have Al Horford. Brook Lopez, Al Horford is not, you know, or Al Horford, Brook Lopez is not. And so yeah, I think and then you also have with Tatum, you also have the organizational confidence and the foundation that you get when Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens are 150,000% on the same page. That helps Stevens do his job without fear, right? You don't have to worry about, well, KCP has to shoot five extra times or five more times per game because we're trying to appease Rich Paul in the chance that it indirectly affects LeBron maybe coming to Los Angeles. Like, Stevens doesn't have to deal with that bull, right? And so I think Tatum has been phenomenal. I think he will continue to be really freaking good because it's not like that situation is changing anytime soon. And because he is a super talented young player who seems to get it not just from an on-court way, but what it takes to succeed night in, night out in the NBA, that none of that takes away from the fact that the Celtics are a much better organization right now than the Lakers. And you're seeing the fruits of those labors. You're seeing a team that is competing for a title right now and also has an insanely bright future. The Lakers right now are hoping to maybe one day be able to compete for a title and they're taking the short route to get there. And it might be costing their nose to in spite of their face. And it's something that Laker fans are legitimately concerned about. Now, again, like I said, the Lakers may have fallen ass backwards into a decent situation where, yeah, they do build with this young core. And maybe they do add the right kind of free agents who aren't Luol Deng and who aren't Timofey Mozgov at a combined $3 zillion over the next 33 millennia. But you know, they might have found this sweet spot where, okay, maybe we don't get LeBron and maybe we even don't get Paul George, but we sign the right kind of veteran, actual NBA talent to combine with this young group that has shown promise this year, and maybe they go forth that way. But for right now, it's hard to argue with what the Celtics are doing, and when you show that in direct comparison with what the Lakers are doing, Laker fan, me personally being a Laker fan, I'm watching this like, ah, man.
Well, yep. Anthony, I will always say this: I really hate you because you're a very nice and knowledgeable Lakers fan, and it runs counter to everything I want to think about Lakers fans. So it's the best compliment I can give you, man.
I appreciate it, man. I always really love talking basketball with you, whether it's in Vegas, whether it's on here, whatever it might be. And look, the hashtag every time I hop on another team's podcast is always, oh man, looking forward to hating a loud, obnoxious Laker fan, but he was not that bad.
Yeah, that's it. Like, oh, God damn it. I like this guy. Shit. Oh man. Always a fun time. It's always so unfortunate because we only play you guys twice. And then it's like, that's when we think like, oh man, I should get Anthony on the show. And unfortunately we missed each other in the last go around. So, you know, one of these days we'll have a Celtics Lakers finals to talk about again. If there's anything that I do like watching the Lakers struggle, but if the Lakers are good, they might as well be good when the Celtics are good, because goddamn, those are so much fun.
Oh, so, man. But we'll always have that stretch from whatever it was, 2007 to 2010. Oh,
man. Goddamn, that Perkins ACL injury.
Where I'm going to piss Celtics fans off, because Kendrick Perkins stopped you guys from winning a title. Kendrick Perkins, he of the Minnetonka Buffalo right now.
Yeah, well, look, he sucks now, but I mean, back then they couldn't keep you off the boards. There was just the Celtics had a lead in the fourth quarter that they just couldn't hold because they had nobody to defend the rim and nobody to rebound. And Perkins, for all of his limitations, did those things. And Rasheed Wallace was just too old and out of shape. And he did a good job, but he faded down the stretch, and it just didn't work out. So I will forever, forever believe that, and you'll never take that away from me.
You and Doc Rivers both.
Yeah, that starting lineup still has not lost the playoff series, my man.
Oh, man. All right, man.
Always a pleasure. I really appreciate you coming on.
Anytime, bud. Have a good one. We'll be right back.